Welcome to Rocket Ship, the home of epic React Native content. I'm Simon Grimm, creator of Galaxies.dev, and today's guest is Nader Debit, teacher, author, developer, director of developer relations at EigenLabs. I took so many more notes on you, but first of all, thanks for joining me today, Nader.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
You are also, according to my notes, AI and Web3 expert, and I think this is going to be the theme of today's conversation. So we're going to do everything a bit in the realm of React Native, but we're going to touch on AI and Web3 because we haven't really done this before. But just about your past, you, I think, are also the creator of React Native Elements. Is that true?
Yes, but that's definitely been a while, and I worked on it and maintained it for a couple of years, but since then it's been kind of handed off to the community. So I
told you up front, just a super incredibly interesting and multi-layered person. Everything that you've done, you have like a GitHub README story that I will link up for everyone who's interested. But before we get into React Native AI and Web3 stuff, I would love to just give a picture of where you come from. And I found this quote, I think, which you can probably explain. So 3 years ago, I left my job at AWS to go all in on Web3. So tell us the story about where you come from and why you made that decision.
Yeah, so that particular story, I mean, I was basically being promoted to principal at AWS, which is like L7. To give you an idea, most of the time, those folks make between 500, 800K a year. So it's like a really high-paying role. But it's also one of those types of roles where you might feel very like unmotivated to try anything new further down the road, because you kind of have these golden like handcuffs. And I was kind of worried that like if I took that new position that I was going to be working in the corporate world for the rest of my life, and it just seemed extremely boring. And at the same time, I was starting to dive into blockchain technologies. So like I mentioned in the tweet, I ended up taking a role that paid like less than half what I was making before to just get my foot into the door into the blockchain world, because I saw the potential there and the growth being like a lot more than the traditional like cloud space. And I've kind of been really happy with my progression there, because now I'm going to be making like a lot more than that. But also it's just a lot more fun. So I think like it was just kind of me, you know, just sharing that moment, because it's been 3 years now. It felt very, very like hard to explain to my family and my wife and stuff at the time, but like over time it's paid off a lot and I'm like super happy. But like where I come from, I'm a self-taught developer, started coding professionally like really maybe the age of 30. So I started a lot later than a lot of people, and self-taught, and part of what has driven me has been to take the like a lot of the stuff that I learned was from blog posts and people sharing and helping me. So like part of what I've done in my career is kind of like try to do that to the other people that will be coming behind me. So helping, teaching, sharing is like really a passion of mine, mainly because like it kind of got me to where I am today, the people that have done that in the past. So I kind of want to pay it forward, I guess.
Yeah, that's incredible. And as I said, I think I came across your content already when you're doing Angular or AngularJS, like, I don't know, probably 8 years ago or something. But at some point, you probably made the switch to React. How long did you work at AWS until you quit?
About 3.5 years.
Okay. And that also was 3 years ago. So you now got like 3 years of somewhat full-time Web3 experience?
Yeah, April 10th will be 3 years. So it's March 20th, so we're less than 3 years away, but almost 3 years, yeah.
Almost, right. Yeah, when this episode drops, it's, yeah, close to it. So I know you did tutorials on both Web3 and currently AI. Maybe you're just going to kick this off a bit. What are you currently more excited about? Is it AI or Web3?
I would say I'm kind of more currently interested in blockchain and Web3 stuff. Mainly because I feel like the breadth of challenges and the breadth of opportunity is a lot more in the blockchain space. I feel like it's still kind of in its infancy, whereas I think with AI stuff, the barrier to entry is a lot lower, and you don't really have to have a lot of expertise to build an AI today. You can kind of just pick up some JavaScript and some API. So therefore, I think it's a lot harder maybe for someone just to kind of like come out of college or teach themselves and then like feel like they can compete in the market maybe without being extremely like specialized maybe on the back end part of AI. Like if you're an AI consumer, it's really simple to come up with an idea and start a business. Maybe though, you might be able to build out something like what Levels, I forgot, was Levels.io and these other like growth, these different hackers that are like building out different products. But even then, like you kind of see even the most successful people there complaining that they don't really have a moat. And I feel like it's a lot easier right now in the blockchain world to build kind of like a moat. If you find a problem that hasn't been solved yet and you spend a year or two specializing in that, the return and the payoff is very high. But also it's a lot harder maybe for someone to come in and kind of swoop in and compete with you because of the like complexities that come in building out a lot of these different decentralized networks.
Okay, this is going to be interesting because I kind of previously, before this episode, I thought you were maybe be more interested in AI and what's currently going on because you actually have this React Native AI repository. We're going to place this at a later point. We're going to come back to React Native and AI. I definitely got some questions, what you mentioned, like tools, but I certainly see your point about it. It's quite easy to get started. It's probably more complicated to do something useful. But we're going to come back to that later. So, this is interesting because this is going to be a learning part for me as well. So my feeling, my personal feeling was that Web3 is kind of over. Nobody talks about it anymore. We kind of missed the point. It was interesting for a year or two. It was super hyped. Everyone was excited about it. But then eventually it died out and was replaced by AI. So you're right in this. So explain me, is Web3 still alive? And then how is it doing?
Okay, so with AI stuff, yeah, for sure, AI is still currently pretty hyped. I've actually built and sold a company in AI. I have an app in the App Store that's bringing in a couple $1,000 a month. That's AI, but I'm still like more excited about blockchain stuff. And I'll tell you what, like if you look at the actual job market, the people that are in the traditional world, which I would kind of almost bucket AI as part of that, even though if you're really, really like specialized in AI, you obviously have more job opportunities. But I think we're talking to mostly like front end and full stack and mobile engineers.
Yeah.
I feel like there's been a lot of layoffs and a lot of job insecurity lately. A lot of people are saying that they're even taking like less pay with their next roles and like being less picky. Whereas in the blockchain world, it's the complete opposite. Like I myself have turned down multi-million-dollar a year job offers. People that I know that are, I would say, intermediate are turning down $500,000 plus a year job offers. The job market is absolutely like right insane in the blockchain space right now. So I feel like it's a completely different world there, but I feel like it's kind of like this hype cycle. Like it's just like how AI had like this really big hype. I feel like it's starting to come down slightly right now. And then it'll kind of like steady out. Right. I feel like crypto and blockchain and Web3 went through like that on steroids. It was just so much hype, but there wasn't a lot of substance there. And then it crashed really hard. And then now that it's coming back, a lot of that investment is still there, but also a lot of more investment is rolling in like as we speak. And there just aren't enough people to kind of build out this stuff. So the competition is really, really high. And it's like a really good time to have been steady the course and focused on this area for the last couple of years. I'm sure that if we're talking about like the outliers, you're probably not worried about job security because you're probably extremely good and you know, you're going to have a million opportunities. There's a lot of opportunity right now across the board, traditional web and mobile, like AI, to be a consultant maybe and go out there and maybe start like an agency and build stuff like this. But if you're talking about strictly, okay, I want to become good at programming and I want to land a job that pays really well, I think like right now there is no comparison between the two job markets. It's kind of like really, really night and day from what I've seen, at least.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, like probably one and a half years, I went through the tutorials and I was in that hype cycle, and I learned that people are actually making millions, and that's like usually developers don't make millions if they learn something. So I wasn't aware that this is still a thing.
I
mean,
I know that these AI people that are like getting hired at that are kind of building out the models and the backends at AI companies are actually definitely making millions per year.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you're involved in the models and what's going on behind the scenes, that's certainly like super interesting. But I think the majority of people are just playing around with it. They build a ChatGPT clone. They use OpenAI APIs. We use image generation, Midjourney, or something. And you usually can't make millions of that. Like, it's basically, it comes down to calling an API and passing around some tokens and like knowing what a token means in the first place, or it's not too complicated, in fact. So this is super interesting for me. You are working at EigenLabs. Maybe we can talk about that a bit. EigenLabs and also EigenLayer, which I don't know if you're aware. Eigen is like a German word, but I don't know if this has any relation to it. So could you describe what this is for, let's say, for people who are not super deep into Web3? What is EigenLayer and what is EigenLabs doing?
Yeah, for sure. This is kind of a React Native podcast, so I don't want to make it too
right, so we're going to stay at the surface.
Yeah. Well, you could kind of think of it as a developer platform for launching blockchains and other decentralized networks. That's kind of the most simple way I would explain it. So right now, if you wanted to build a blockchain, there is a lot of complexity involved in that. One of the most challenging things that has to do with building out the security and securing the network with some type of valuation, because like I think a lot of people understand Bitcoin, for example, if you want to basically take over the network, one of the reasons that people say Bitcoin is secure is because the network is worth like $1 trillion or something crazy like that at this point. So if you wanted to kind of like attack the network, you would need to buy like all this hardware and have all this money and do all this stuff. And even then it would basically almost be impossible. So if you want to build a new blockchain, you have to kind of take similar considerations. Like if someone was to attack your network, like what would it cost for them to do that? And EigenLayer basically allows an existing network, which is Ethereum, that security to be then handed over to new networks that just any developer can launch. And they can kind of inherit that large security. That's kind of the general idea. So like if someone was to join this space and want to launch a new product, they could consider that EigenLayer would be a platform that would enable them to do that without having to worry about that particular part of building the network.
That's interesting, because it's really hard to follow this along, like the terms of Web3, what a layer is and chain and whatever. So for normal people, this is really hard to pick up. And I don't know if this is why people get so much paid in that space, because it's like a whole new terminology and like a complete, it feels so different from HTML, JavaScript, TypeScript, and the discussions we have about Tailwind.
Yeah, no, it totally is. And I think like one of the things that I can just give as general career advice is that if you can kind of very much embrace like working and being comfortable in a chaotic environment, then you're probably going to do well. Because like a lot of people do get scared, or they just feel nervous, like when they're working in a very, very crazy, fast paced, chaotic type of environment. And it feels like no one knows what's going on. And often they don't. I mean, even at like AWS, like at a place where you would think like, oh, these people have it together, it's still similar to that. And everyone that's worked at a startup has felt this. But I think in the blockchain and Web3 space, it's like that on steroids. It becomes even like crazier. And yeah, it is kind of chaotic, but I think if you can kind of embrace that and be one of those people that tries to still push forward in that type of environment and try to understand and make sense of things, then you'll probably just do well.
I mean, part of your description also fits the feelings people have about React and the whole front end world.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So you did, I think 2 years ago, somewhat, maybe it's your most popular video. I don't know, how to build a full stack NFT marketplace on Ethereum with Polygon and Next.js. It has like 300,000 views. I assume based on the pace of what's going on, this is outdated or?
Yes, definitely outdated. I mean, it's outdated, like if you wanted to follow along, but the general concepts are actually still applicable. But yeah, you would probably have a hard time following that video today because most of those packages would have been updated and things would break. In fact, I need to kind of put a little disclaimer on that video. But yeah, that was one of my most popular videos because at the time there was a lot of hype around building in Web3, and that video showed people how to kind of put the full stack together and build something. I'm actually considering doing a new one that is more focused on a current use case, which would be building out like a social media platform on a blockchain, and kind of like applying similar ideas. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like mobile stuff though, like, you know, mobile is obviously, you know, a very big focus of this show, but also I would say like just everyone kind of knows most people are interacting with their apps on mobile. But in the blockchain world, a lot of the SDKs and APIs and stuff are not quite 100% tailored and ready for mobile. So it's kind of like the mobile world is still a little behind in the blockchain world. So I think there's a lot of alpha there as well that like I'm able to hopefully try to bring to the table when I'm building out like UIs, that I'm building out like mobile first and I'm building out stuff in React Native and showing people how that works. So it's kind of a fun area to be specializing in.
Yeah, I actually got the advice. It was probably about 2 years ago from a previous like boss of mine who like also ventured into Web3 and got super excited. And he told me back then, yeah, you should check this out. This guy, Nader Debit, he's doing all the Web3 stuff. And you should do React Native for Web3 because this is coming to mobile and there's no content on it. And it took me some time to get into React Native, and now that I'm at the point that I feel comfortable with React Native, I feel like if I would drop the same tutorial that you did today, it probably wouldn't get a lot of eyeballs because people, I don't know, moved on. But from what you say it's still a super like great market.
I feel like right now it is becoming a little bit more exciting again, but it's more of like a slower, steady, sustainable type of thing, which is good. Like that's kind of what you want. You don't want crazy, like overhyped things happening because then people join and they maybe get disappointed because I don't know, they expected more. But I think the growth right now is good. And I think that it's just expanded what is out there. I mean, I think now you can build in cloud, you can build on AI, you can build in the blockchain space, you can combine all of these things. And there's just tons of opportunity.
Yeah, that's good to hear. So you talked about use cases. I actually did probably around the same time. I actually went through some of these tutorials and I built my own NFT and I deployed a smart contract, Mumbai test network, something. I'm pretty good at forgetting what I did really fast, but I think I used all the technologies here, Ether.js, Hardhead, Solidity, yeah, everything included. So you said today you would do it with a more practical use case. And I think that was always the critique people had for Web3, that you like the whole space is, I mean, yeah, we were talking usually here about React Native, but this is just too fascinating to not do it. So let's dive a bit into Web3. people usually complain that the Web3 world is like a religion and they just make up their own use cases. And
yes,
I from the outside, I agree to this, because if we compare this again to AI, the thing with AI was that when like ChatGPT become popular and like it boiled up, actually my wife heard about ChatGPT and what it can do. So normal people interacted with it. Whereas with Web3, the best normal people did was they heard that Bitcoin is good and they should buy a Bitcoin, and that's the whole story. But it had no like real world appliance for them.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly.
Has the Web3 world figured out use cases for normal people at this point?
Yeah,
I'm being very cynical here.
No,
I'm sorry.
Totally. I mean, it's a valid point, and it's the thing. It's one of the things that I actually talk about and kind of complain about online, because I'm trying to be as pragmatic about this space as possible, because I think that's healthy. Because again, if you try to get people interested and excited about something, and then they come and they're like, okay, what's there? And then they come and there isn't anything there, then you lose their trust. And I think like a lot of people, that happened to them during the last like cycle or hype cycle. I think I get excited about early technologies because I see the potential there, even if it isn't quite there yet. Like when React Native came out, literally a few weeks after React Native came out, I started building with it and I was extremely excited about it because the potential was there. When, you know, I mean, like I've always been kind of excited about the future almost in things. And I think like that crypto and blockchains are very great for me to be like applying my own energy towards, because it's like that. There's tons of potential. And yes, there are starting to be like really great use cases as well that probably weren't really fleshed out or ready to use a few years ago. And I think a few years from now, we'll see even more. But I mean, I think like the original use case that makes tons of sense to most people is just finance. I'm not going to talk about this as the use case I would build for a tutorial, but let me touch on it for a second. I think stable coins are really, really, really powerful and important. They allow people to transact all around the world using the exact same currency. A lot of people in different parts of the world don't have a stable currency like the euro or the US dollar. They are getting paid and then their valuation of their currency deteriorates so fast that they literally have to spend their money the week or the month that they get paid to buy things, because if they don't, then the money will become worthless basically. And when I went to Argentina, for example, if you brought 100 US dollars and you went to like somebody's house and they like behind the scenes, like converted that to the local currency, you would get enough money to last you for like weeks eating out, like doing all kinds of stuff. So stable coins are really great because they allow people to have a currency that they can keep that doesn't go down in value as fast. So a lot of international payments and stuff for people that are working in the digital like space are now requesting stable coins as their payment method. It works really well. Also for me, sending international payments that's my preferred way to do it. Imagine like with current bank transfers for large amounts of money internationally, or even with small amounts of money internationally.
International bank transfers are just a joke.
Exactly. So here, imagine
like,
someone
companies
just says,
are sometimes like they pay me sometimes. It takes weeks. I had once a case where a payment of a substantial amount of dollars was just lost. It left the bank account of the company. It did not arrive at my. It was no way to trace it.
Yeah.
It was just gone.
I mean,
for weeks.
I still owe someone money, $300 and something in the UK, and he will refuse to like let me pay because we can't figure out how to wire money from my account to his account. And I told him I would pay him in crypto, blah, blah, blah. Like he's not interested, but he just hasn't gotten paid yet. But anyway, like imagine, I mean, this is a great use case. Like you send me an address, I send you the money. The cost to send the transaction now is like less than a penny or a penny. So it's not like you're paying a lot of money to send this transaction. They get the money, whatever. So that's a great use case. But beyond that, I think like, what we're starting to actually see materialize is the opportunity to kind of like replace, or not really replace, but maybe have enhanced or alternative versions of traditional web infrastructure that can be used instead using decentralized infrastructure. So why would you want to do that, right? Like what's the point? Well, there's a lot of interesting use cases. First of all, if you look at the top three social network founders in the world ever in the history of the world, right? Might be TikTok, might be Mark Zuckerberg, and it might be Jack Dorsey. So Twitter, the Instagram, Facebook people, and then TikTok would be arguably like the top three social networks that have ever been built in the history of the world. Two of those three founders are now rethinking how to build social networks, and they are rebuilding them to be decentralized using decentralized technologies. One of those, Jack Dorsey, he left Twitter. He's been talking shit about Twitter ever since, about how he made mistakes. It should have been built differently. He started working with Blue Sky, or maybe he even founded that. And then now he's going into Nostr, which is more of a like decentralized, whatever, social platform. And he kind of talks about a lot of the Web3 stuff using his own terminology, but basically the ideas are the same. Public immutable infrastructure, censorship resistance. I can't just wake up tomorrow and have my account deleted for some arbitrary reason. Happens all the time. Sometimes it's valid. Most of the time, it's kind of more nuanced than that. Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg hired this guy, forgot his name, but he's basically the head of Instagram and he's also the head of Threads. He gave a talk, a TED talk last year that was talking about the value of building social networks on chain. The same things that kind of Jack Dorsey talks about, the ability to have all of this data public, open, and accessible by the world, censorship resistance, the composability aspect of it. So what the one of the first posts that was made on Threads from the head of product. Let me see what his name of what his name is actually.
Well, while you look the
Adam
name
Mosseri.
Up.
Yeah. So Adam Mosseri, one of his first posts on Threads was, "We are building Threads to be decentralized. We're rolling this out in a phased, like I guess, rollout because it's kind of complicated to build. But on day one, but like yeah, Threads is basically going to be a decentralized network, and these are the reasons why, blah blah blah." They're basically stating all the same things that like these crazy Web3 people have been talking about for a long time. Imagine building a business on something like Twitter, using the Twitter API. This was a feasible thing like 10 or 12 years ago. But what happens when the data is completely owned and siloed by a company that is, you know, for profit, that is their way to make money, is that they want to control all the advertising on top of it. They want to control everything about it. So if someone wants to build a company on top of it, they can do that based on the API that's provided, but they can't go to sleep at night not wondering what's going to happen tomorrow. Is that API going to change? Are they going to close it off? Will they raise the price 10,000%, which is what happened with Twitter recently? You just don't know. So imagine if we started building our infrastructure on data and APIs that were public and immutable, meaning that I can build a product on this existing backend, and then I can go and like take other data and other things, like put them together and build new experiences on top of that. Like theoretically, that's possible. But with the current state of blockchain technology, or at least with the state of blockchain technology just a couple of years ago, it wasn't scalable. It was too expensive. There were a lot of challenges around UX and things like that and developer experience to make this like feasible, but it's come a long way now. So I think social networks are a really good example of this. Like I mentioned, Threads, Nostr, Blue Sky, a bunch of others, but also like in the blockchain space specifically, you have a couple of really great examples of this becoming a profitable, like in good use case. One of them is Farcaster, which is a decentralized social network. The other is Lens Protocol. I worked at Lens Protocol for a year and a half. Farcaster and Warpcast are a product that kind of was spun out of Coinbase, a team at Coinbase, I would say. And word on the street is that they're raising like a $2 billion valuation. They have a really, really great like growing user base. And you can do stuff on Warpcast and Farcaster that and on Lens that just are not possible anywhere else. Also, anyone in the world can actually say, oh, I love Warpcast and I love Farcaster, but the mobile app that they've built, which is React Native, by the way, and by the way, if you're listening, they're hiring $300,000 base salary plus ownership in this $2 billion company, if you're a good React Native developer. Anyway, so you can say, I don't like this app, so I'm going to build out my own app. And guess what? You can actually take the data that they've spent years like building this API for, and you can build out your own app. And guess what? There's nothing anyone can ever do about that. Like the data is there. It's not going away. They can't change the API one day. So now you have this like this potential thriving like ecosystem of people that can, of apps that can come out of this one data, this one like quote unquote database. So that kind of is exciting to me.
Yeah, thank you. That was a super great overview about what's going on. I'm definitely sure, yeah, that the appliances to finances, what you said is obvious to everyone, social networks. I'm just curious to like when this will make its way into the life of normal people. Like, yeah, I'm on Blue Sky as well. And by the way, Blue Sky is also developed with Expo and Expo Web. And it's like one person developed the whole thing just to make reference to Red Native on this podcast. Still trying to bring the creator on. If you listen to this, come on. But anyway, these are like things that we developers usually join. Like, oh yeah, I'm checking this out because it's based on like the blockchain or whatever technology. But it's not really making its way into the lives of normal people. So it feels like they have to opt into something completely new. I have to leave behind my 10K something followers to join this new platform. I have to leave all the WordPress blog posts that I've wrote and join this free thing. So is there a way for like a gradual transition and helping people with like real world use cases to come into Web3?
Yeah, I mean, I think like social is a good entry point because people already understand it. And I think like when TikTok came out, people were like, at first maybe, oh shit, I've already have like a million followers on YouTube. I don't want to invest in this new platform. But it became popular and anyone that came in early benefited a lot from that. I think we're starting to see similar trends happening in these other social networks. There are a lot of like creative people that are not too happy with the monetization that they're seeing. They don't really like the streaming model. Like people that built, you know, that spent 10 years like building out all of their music and stuff like this are making nothing, like, because the streaming model just sucks really bad. They're having success on these other platforms monetizing their content. So artists, I would say like musicians, even like people doing acting and stuff like that are starting to kind of find creative ways to monetize, mainly because with these different platforms, there's peer-to-peer connection in multiple different ways. Like you're peer-to-peer connected through the platform, but also you can monetize peer-to-peer. There is no middleman. So if you kind of create some creative way for someone to support you, they can do that and you can earn, again, stable currencies. And these, a lot of these people that are creating are from around the world. And I think that the UX is getting so much better that you don't really have to be crypto native at all. I think with Warpcast, you sign up, you download from the Apple App Store, you sign up with a passkey, and then you have an account, and all of that blockchain stuff is kind of abstracted away. But yeah, I think majority of a lot of these apps, still the foundation are like crypto native people. But I think you're starting to see a lot more people that you might consider like normie people becoming like involved in these apps and using these apps and having success, because a lot of that really bad UX is starting to be abstracted away better and better. Still a lot of work to do, but I think Warpcast is a great example of this, that you can just download the app, you sign up, like there is no really crypto stuff there that is visible to the user. You can still have a lot of those benefits if you choose to start interacting with the network in that way. Like they give you like an address under the hood that you can then have and export if you want it, but it's not like when you sign up, you need to have a crypto wallet or any cryptocurrency tokens or anything like that. It's just sign up and you have an account. And then I think like for developers, it's really interesting beyond the fact that like all of this data and all this infrastructure is open and public and these APIs are available for them to use. But what if you could say, okay, I like Facebook or I like Instagram and I like this distribution model, like where if someone shares something, like it gets in front of a million people potentially. What if I could build out an app directly in the feed of this app? What if I could build out my own mini app directly in Instagram or something like that anyone could use? It's just not possible because these platforms are closed and there's no way they would start allowing that, right? Well, actually, you can do that literally today with both Lens Protocol and Farcaster in different ways. So with Farcaster, they have this idea of a frame. And also this is available on some Lens apps where you write JavaScript and you're able to build out these custom experiences directly in feed. So there are a lot of examples of different teams getting distribution for just random products. So one of my friends, she has this company where she's embedding NFC chips and like nails and also in different things, where you can kind of like, if you're going to, for instance, a conference, or if you're going to a concert or a place that you're going to meet a lot of people, you might want to share your Twitter profile, or you might want to share your portfolio, whatever. So she has these like nails that you can put on, and you program that. Anyway, it's just like a typical, just a product, but she's using that that Farcaster frame for distribution. And she collaborated with a developer, and somehow like a lot of people saw her product through that experience. And I don't know, it provides like a really cool interactive experience directly in the feed that you can just build anything that you like with. And again, stuff like that just isn't possible, at least that I know of right now in the Web2 world.
I think these are interesting. I think I've actually seen these nails somewhere. Maybe it was in your Twitter feed, and it's definitely something interesting, like of my curiosity. So we do want to get a bit more practical, probably also touch a bit more on React Native now. I would love to get your point on NFTs and what we can do with NFTs as well, but then we would probably get to like a 2-hour episode. Yeah. So maybe we're gonna save the topic of NFTs for the future. So right now, I would love to know, because we're in the realm of Web3, how well does it work with React Native? As I said, my friend 2 years ago said, oh, you should definitely do something about React Native. And before you said some mobile SDKs are not really working great with React Native if you're using blockchain technology. And on top of that, I personally found it quite hard to just get started with Web3 and React Native, because you usually don't do like the to-do example. You don't write your to-dos to blockchain or ETH or whatever sidechain, right. Because it's a horrible idea to have like a notes taking application on chain because of the transaction cost. So what is a good way to get started, also especially for React Native developers and the tools available right now?
Yeah, so I think you have to consider the App Store restrictions in the context of blockchains to realize the challenges there. Because right now, if you want to do any types of payments for in-app payments, Apple restricts you from doing anything other than their in-app payment SDK, right? Like you can't even accept a digital payment in an app through Stripe if you submit it to the App Store. I just tried like a few months ago without realizing, like I thought maybe I could just give them a 30% cut of my Apple sale through Stripe. This is me because I haven't built like an in-app payment app in years. But no, like you actually literally have to use their in-app payment SDK in Apple. Like there is no other option they give you. So imagine now, like you want to accept cryptocurrency for some digital payment or things like that. Apple will actually restrict that as well. You have to give them that 30% cut. So it depends on the type of app you're building. You might just not be able to build an app for the App Store. Like you might only be able to build a web app because you're accepting or doing some type of transactions that the App Store just prohibits. So you have to kind of consider that before you even start building, because you don't want to spend a year building something, right? And then the App Store just doesn't let you like have it. So I think that's the first consideration. And then once you've decided, okay, this app is something that is going to be accepted in the App Store or not, then you might consider, okay, React Native is right for me because everything looks good. If you want to build out like a traditional blockchain app where you have the wallet and the signing and all this stuff, that UX kind of sucks. That is something you can do easily today with blockchains, with React Native. Those SDKs are available. But what I'm more excited about is kind of abstracting all of that away to kind of make it to where sign in with Apple, I'm creating a wallet under the hood. The user doesn't see any of that because we want to target the world. We don't want crypto people only. We want anyone in the world to just use our app. So there are some SDKs that make that possible that are kind of like in their infancy. They work, but you might have to like what you call chew a little glass or whatever. Like you might have to just go through a little bit of pain. And if you're building in React Native on the bleeding edge, you're probably used to pain at this point anyway. So it's like, it's probably not anything like crazy. But for instance, there's this wallet called Privy Wallet. They have a React Native Expo SDK. And a few months, maybe like a month or two ago when I used it, you had to like request access for the React Native SDK or something like that. Anyway, like it's not hard to get a hold of though, but with it, you can actually build out a blockchain application that is very seamless. The user can sign up with Google, or they can sign up with Apple, or they can sign in with their with a wallet. So he kind of gives you all those options. And I think the core of a lot of this has to do, like the challenges have to do with identity and access controls and wallets and things like that and verification. Because like a lot of the time, your wallet is your identity. So like handling that is a much different than the traditional Web 2 world where we'll do OAuth and we'll like, you know, have them signing in with like some OAuth provider. So with this, you're kind of allowing that, but under the hood, you're spinning up an address and then you're kind of like transacting based on that address as opposed to their personal identity.
So that also means that you said payments on the App Store are usually a problem. You shouldn't do a Web3 application in which you exchange payments, but there's no problem in general to do a React Native application that is using some sort of blockchain technology.
Exactly. Yeah. So like a great use case, like this is great, honestly, because most of the use cases that I care about are non-financial anyway. So if you want to build a social network, if you want to build on a API like Warpcast or Lens, you don't need any of that stuff for the most part anyway, because you're creating posts, comments, you're sharing things, you're uploading videos and stuff. All that's possible. You don't need any payments to do any of that stuff. A lot of the newer blockchains are so cheap anyway, you can subsidize any transaction costs that might occur if you build your own custom network that you're not kind of leveraging one of these existing networks. You might say, okay, I want to create this new type of social network, and all of this stuff is going to be on chain in some form or fashion. And it's going to cost me like 1/100th of a cent per transaction. At scale, like if you start getting a billion users, it might become too expensive. But for a million users or 10 million users, it's probably something that will cost slightly an order of magnitude higher than like a traditional AWS type of backend, but not really that much more expensive.
Okay, so I'm now genuinely curious about Web3, and certainly after our conversation, I will go back and watch some Web3 stuff to get up to date. I don't know how to make a good transition, but let's talk a bit more now again about React Native and AI, because those were the topics I also wanted to hear your opinion about and get your thoughts on. So I think you actually somewhere said that you first tried Ionic before React Native. Why did you stick with React Native after that? Because, I don't know, I didn't tell you, but I've been doing Ionic for 8, 9, I don't know how many years since it came out, and been a big like fan of it because of all the like write ones and you can run it everywhere. Mm-hmm. So why did you decided to stick with React Native back then?
Sorry, I think we broke up for a second, but we're good now. Sorry. So
yeah, thank you.
So for Ionic and React Native as a comparison, I actually started first with jQuery Mobile. Do you know jQuery Mobile?
Yeah, I wrote my bachelor thesis with something called Titanium Studio.
Oh wow! So I've always been like really interested in these different mobile frameworks that allowed me to write JavaScript, because when I first got into software development, period, like my really thoughts were, oh, I'm going to build this app and it's going to like make me money, right? Like I'm going to build an app and whatever. And then I started looking into Objective-C and I started looking into, at the time, like, you know, Java, and wow, it was like so complicated. I was like, there's no way I'm going to ever learn this. So I started writing JavaScript and I was building web apps. And then the fact that you could start building mobile apps with JavaScript with Ionic and jQuery Mobile and React Native was like just really, really cool to me. And I don't really have anything against Ionic. I do feel like the UX is, if you build a really polished React Native app, it's slightly better than an Ionic app. But I think what really ended up happening with me with React Native is that when it came out, I was like one of the first people that was like really, really building in that ecosystem. I launched an app to the App Store within a year. I ended up answering like all the questions in Stack Overflow. I started getting a lot of consulting opportunities. So it was kind of like a niche that I was starting to kind of build for myself. And I continued to focus on it because of the success that I had already had, and it kind of snowballed from there.
Did you ever regret that you didn't try Flutter?
I mean, not really. Flutter's pretty cool. I mean, I can pick up a Flutter app and find my way through the code base, and I've actually built a couple of prototypes using Flutter. But I don't know. I just like React Native better. I mean, I like React, and I understand React. It's one of those things that, like, it's kind of like you learn really a lot of deep technical expertise about something, and it applies now across all of these other places. Now you can write, you know, web apps, mobile apps, and you can do stuff now with the Vision Pro and all this stuff. I just kind of like that idea about React and how much you can do with it. So I kind of stick with React. I would say that's one of the main reasons, is just because of how much you can do with it.
Yeah, I agree. And the React Native community is just awesome. If you see all the players working together, like Shopify, Microsoft, Meta, like everyone's involved, like not absolutely. Even to mention Software Mention, Expo, and CallStack. And like everyone's just working together. Everyone's like doing their part to make the ecosystem better. It just feels so like, yeah, there's just a power. It's hard to describe.
100%. Yeah. I mean, honestly, you know, I'm here because of open source developers. I'm here because of people that I've taught and things like that. I can't say enough about the React Native ecosystem and community with Expo and all those folks, along with just everyone else that's building out a lot of these libraries that we get to use every day to make our like companies and stuff successful. We're very lucky.
Right. And you recently released a quite interesting tutorial called Building Full Stack Mobile AI Apps with React Native and Expo, followed up by a lot of technologies that I don't really know: OpenAI, Anthropic, Cohere, and Feld.ai. So could you describe the what's going on here? So you said in the beginning, AI is, it's not boring, but it's quite easy to get started, especially if you just use OpenAI APIs. It's like there's a handful of API endpoints you got to learn, and then it just works. But what's going on with this stack? Why did you decide to create this sort of stack? And what are the technologies involved in that stack? What are the different things doing together, and how do they play together?
Yeah, so I released this app called AI Buddy to the App Store, and I had a lot of people saying, hey, is this open source, and all this stuff. So I will kind of mention another thing that happened to me not maybe 6-8 months before this. I launched an app to the app. It wasn't to the App Store. I just launched a mobile like web app, I would say, called Roam Around, and I open sourced it. And what I ended up doing was like selling that company. But because I'd open sourced it, a lot of people had actually cloned that app and used the name and then launched it to the App Store. And we ended up having some like legal issues there. So I didn't open source AI Buddy immediately. I just launched it to the App Store. And I still wanted to kind of like build in the open source spirit. So instead of like open sourcing AI Buddy, I kind of ripped out a lot of the proprietary stuff from AI Buddy and then made it into like more of like a composable framework with theming and stuff, where if someone like liked AI Buddy a lot, they could fork React Native AI, and they would probably need to like put some work in to build out the payments and the authentication and authorization that would be involved to kind of make that a working product. But I was still able to kind of, you know, provide something to the community. But a couple of companies supposedly are building with that have reached out to me asking me for like consulting and support and stuff like that. So that's been kind of fun. But yeah, I kind of just built it because a lot of the stuff that you end up doing when you're building out these chat UIs is very, very like repetitive. So like mm-hmm. you have the text input fields, and you have the streaming, and you have all this stuff. So like having it all together in a single code base that is hopefully very configurable and themable will allow people to kind of like clone that and build out their own version of some type of like chat interface.
Yeah, I certainly checked out the code. It looks great, especially the streaming part and how it looks in the UI. I'm just curious, what are the different, like the four technologies? Okay, I'm sure about what OpenAI is doing. What is the rest of these doing? Anthropic, Cohere, and Feld.ai?
Yeah, so Claude, Cohere, and OpenAI are all like similar in terms of like what they can do. OpenAI obviously has maybe a lot more features now because they do the vision and all this other stuff. But Claude was something that I kind of hopped on like a long time ago that is, I think is starting to now become more popular. It's basically an alternative large language model to OpenAI's ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. So Anthropic Claude is to me my favorite large language model that I use for pretty much everything at this point. I don't really use ChatGPT anymore unless I can't find my answer with Claude. I think like Claude and ChatGPT will basically be like going neck and neck. Like Claude will release a better model, and then 6 months later, OpenAI will release a better model with ChatGPT 5, and then it'll kind of keep going back and forth. So I might kind of like see who has the most recent release and just build there. Cohere is just another example of a large language model. At the time that I launched, they had like this web option that you can basically like ask questions and it will go on the web and get real-time answers for you, which wasn't really available at the time with these other models. I don't know if it is now. I think it kind of might be. Fal AI, though, is really interesting to me because they are – have you heard of Hugging Face, and have you used that by any chance?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's also one other one. I forgot the name of it, but there's like three that I would kind of like say are the main ones where you can take where they're taking these models and they're like hosting them almost like in a serverless fashion where you can just call an API and start interacting with them for doing all types of like random stuff. So Fal AI is interesting because they've really focused on performance and real time capabilities and speed. None of their models have any sleep time or what you would call a cold start time. So when you hit an endpoint, it's immediate, it comes back. And they also have like these APIs and SDKs that offer a WebSocket connection to where the responses come back in milliseconds. So I liked Fal AI a lot. They have like 55 models now. I think I integrated like 5 or 10 models in my code base, but they have a lot of really cool image and video stuff that you can do basically. So I definitely recommend checking them out.
Yeah, I will certainly put a link in the show notes. So that's a great start. It feels like all this AI stuff is primarily API based. So if I want to get into AI, I just read the docs for some AI stuff and then I send something across and play around with it and use it. Is that feeling true? Like, or is there anything else that I need to understand about AI to be dangerous and get started with AI? Or is it really like just learn that API and then do whatever you want?
Yeah, I think it's both. Like you can learn the API, you can be kind of dangerous. You might come up with some really cool idea no one's thought of before. The barrier to entry for building out like an interesting product or company has never been lower with AI stuff. I see people like shitting on API wrappers for ChatGPT all the time. Like, oh, they're just a wrapper on ChatGPT. Well, I don't think that's that bad of a thing to be building if it provides value to someone, right? So I wouldn't let any of those types of conversations discourage you from experimenting. I do feel like it would be challenging to build like a highly successful company that isn't copied by a dozen people when you're building in this fashion though, unfortunately, just because it's, again, the barrier to entry is so low that if someone builds out a really cool idea, I can probably replicate a version of that overnight even. So I would kind of say, okay, if you want to build a product or company in this space, you need to be like iterating very quickly. You need to be trying to like do everything you can to differentiate, and you can't like hope to be probably a unicorn unless you start building out some very, very unique proprietary stuff that isn't like replicable. And then consider selling your company like pretty early, I would say.
Yeah, I feel the same. A while ago, I had the glorious idea of doing a bedtime stories app with AI. So like you put in the name of your child and the age and some random topics and it generates a bedtime story. And that was actually turned out to be an interesting video, like one of my most successful videos. But of course, there are like 100 bedtime story applications on the App Store at this point, because every parent comes up with that idea. Oh, I should do this. It's quite easy to get started. And yeah, I've heard from others that are starting companies that, yeah, you could just copy this stuff in like days. And to me, it feels a bit more scary as well. Would you say that if we now bring this back to the Web3 world, can I build a successful company application primarily by using what's available in like Web3 APIs and SDKs, or do I also have to get into like Solidity and deploying my contracts? Is it easier to provide value by just like building on what other people have built in the Web3 space?
I think you can do both right now. There are a lot of APIs that you can just tap into. Like I mentioned, for social, you have Farcaster and you have Lens. And for like a lot of the finance stuff, there are a lot of APIs. So there is a lot that you can do there. I feel like the most valuable things that you can be doing, though, might be bringing in like completely new APIs built on data or building on networks that no one has really done that yet. So like the barrier to entry there is a lot higher, but the return on your work is a lot higher as well. And also the moat is a lot bigger. It's a lot harder for someone to come in and replicate that overnight.
Yeah. Awesome.
By the way, I'm sorry because I have a bunch of meetings that are lined up. I'm sorry about that.
I just wanted to wrap it up anyway. I think we answered the questions I got on Twitter anyway. I think they were all answered by you regarding Apple guidelines and partial use cases of Web3. This has been super interesting, Nader. Thank you so much for joining me for this discussion. If people are interested in what you're doing, where can they go to find out more?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. If they'd like to learn more, I would definitely recommend going to my like YouTube channel, maybe checking out some of those videos. I would download Warpcast and I would download Orb. Those are two interesting blockchain related social networks. And creating an account, seeing what's out there. And then I would possibly consider just diving into like the rabbit hole of YouTube and just looking at what's out there, what people are talking about right now in this space and seeing if anything interests you. And then if you're looking for like really a broad overview of what's happening in the industry, check out like a blockchain job board and see what roles are out there. You might be surprised. There might be something that works for you. If you're a React Native developer, I mentioned Warpcast is hiring a 300K base salary. They're about to announce a big fundraise. You can get equity there as well. It'll probably be a really fun place to work.
Awesome. Yeah, I will put all of this in show notes. Actually, I try to. Just want to wrap it up. Thanks again. You're at least an inspiration to me, and you said a great quote. Creating things and putting them out there consistently seems to result in positive things for my life and career. I think this has worked very well for you. So keep up putting out great things to the community, and I would love to bring you back in the future to talk again about practical use cases of Web3 then.
For sure. Maybe a year or two from now, we'll have even more. I really appreciate you having me on. It's been great.
Thanks. Catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.